Yud Beis Adar Sheni, Friday the 18th of March, Rabbi Yehuda Baruch Lieberman, Spirits of Purim, Purim of Spirit.
We're in Heathrow Airport sometime recently. There was an advert run by HSBC. You might be the type of person who keeps your eyes to yourself and you try to avoid looking at the adverts, but this one you can't miss. They've been through everything, they've checked through the luggage, been through passport control, they've boarded, they've been through boarding, they've taken your ticket from you, and as you're walking through the passage, just the last bit, that last passage leads to the aeroplane, there's an advert from HSBC. It goes something like this, somewhere. Exactly. It's a picture of a telephone, normal, simple telephone, and underneath is one word, responsibility. You take a few steps forward, can't do more than a few steps at that point, and there's another picture, the same telephone, but instead of responsibility underneath it, is the word pleasure. Take another few steps, and there's a picture of three cute little children playing outside, and of course underneath it is one word, responsibility. A few more steps, you walk along, and again the same picture of the three little children, and underneath it is the word pleasure. Responsibility, pleasure. Responsibility, pleasure. And the idea is that one man's responsibility is another man's pleasure. Or maybe one man's responsibility is another woman's pleasure. He comes home from the office, spent the whole day on the phone, one phone call after another. All he wants is to spend some time with the kids. He comes home and she says, great, you're home, and she disappears upstairs to talk on the phone. One man's responsibility is another person's pleasure. One person's pleasure is another person's responsibility. And of course the message is, don't forget HSBC, I don't get a cut, but they're the bank. They understand things from different perspectives. They can deal with all your companies, all your customers, wherever they are around the world. They'll be the ones that to understand the right attitudes. Just bank with HSBC and all your problems will be solved. But the underlying message of that advert, I think, is more interesting than the advert itself. There's an assumption here. It's either responsibility or pleasure. You can't have both. They don't mix. We don't mix business and pleasure, because business and pleasure are almost a contradiction. Most people find they don't want to go to work, unless you're making loads and loads and loads of money, which is not that common nowadays. You don't have such cheshek to go to work. It's pleasure you get from other things. Pleasure or responsibility. It's one or the other. If I'm doing what I want, I can take pleasure. If I'm doing what he wants, if I'm working for somebody, if I'm doing what I have to do, there's much less pleasure involved. And the question, of course, is, if that's so, what do we mean when we say, Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha? If it's Ivdu, if I'm working, if it's responsibility, if I've got to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, then why is there going to be simcha at that point? If I've got 248 mitzvos esei, it's a lot, not again nowadays, but a lot are, do this, do that, do the other. And you can have a lois esei, there's more lois esei than esseis. Don't do this, don't do that. Then why would that bring with it a time of simcha? L'chayra, avoda, and simcha are two things that don't naturally go together. Particularly now, Mishnichtas Adon, Adon, B'simcha, we're going right into Adon, we're almost by Purim. We have to stop and think about simcha. How do we get to avoda, the simcha, if the two are in a kind of contradiction? Another interesting thing is b'chalal, the concept of simcha. It's a strange thing, but simcha, happiness, ought not be such a difficult thing to achieve. You've got hundreds of thousands, millions, billions of people on this planet who are all busy with one thing. They're trying to have a happy life. That's the primary goal of most of humanity. What percentage are succeeding? How many people are really happy most of the time? Judging by the statistics and the amount of people who are on various pills, various other chemicals, alcohol, it's one wonders how much happiness there is out there. I heard a statistic recently that in America today, the third cause of death amongst young people is suicide. Usually a person who's really happy isn't committing suicide. That means the person who still thinks he might be happy doesn't commit suicide. There's a lack of happiness in the world. Why should that be? People don't know what makes them happy. Do we not know what brings simcha? Ask any person, stop a group of people, and ask them for the five things that make them happy. Different people will list different things. To some people it's music, to another people who sit around with friends, another people who sit in the family, a third person maybe tack it at a party, maybe a meal in a restaurant. So many things that bring a person happiness. And we all know what those things are. Every person knows what brings them happiness. Yet, despite that, and despite everybody trying day and night, or most people trying day and night to achieve happiness by doing those things that make them happy, they're not making it there. We just don't seem to get there. Well, the world, where many, many, many people, probably the vast majority of humanity, if stopped and asked, would say, it's a miserable world. There's so many things that can make us happy, but we don't seem to get there. So let's think a little bit about what the concept, what Tacker brings happiness. What is it about things that make us happy? Why does something enjoy to a person? And the Pashtus is that happiness comes when a person grows, expands, gets something new. When we talk about simcha, when we talk about the word in Lashon HaKodesh, I'm going to a simcha, you mean either a new birth, a shalom zachar, a kiddush, a bris, or a chasana, where a person expands it. Everyone would agree that's a simcha, but to a certain extent it's meant to be a simcha. A person's got beyond himself, has now got married, has got a partner. A simcha, expanding, getting beyond. Anything that a person does that allows him to get out of his gulos, out of the limits, brings him simcha. A person has a desire, something he really wants to achieve, and then achieves it. There's a feeling of expansion. Even food can bring a person happiness. A person was limited, and now has somewhat expanded. And yet, all the same, with somehow the strength in Lashon HaKodesh, we know that in the Gemara Sukkot says there's two ways of measuring a tefach, right? You have a tight tefach, where it's right closed, and you have a tefach sochet, which is a little bit open, slight gap, half an etzba altogether, slightly bigger tefach. The small tefach and the big tefach. How does the Gemara describe them? The tefach sochet, the smiling tefach, and the tefach otze, the sad tefach. The sad tefach is when it's closed, when it's tight, when it's constricted, when a person's limited, it brings in sadness. When there's an expansion, the space, you can get out, and you can do things, you can go places, you can achieve, that brings a person a sense of simcha, the tefach seichel. And yet, we don't seem to be happy. And the teretz, of course, is the famous words of Mitzvah Shishonim, that a person is built of two parts. We have within us two separate existences. When Yitzer Hashem Elokim, there's two yuds in that pasuk, we are a double creation. Guf and neshama. Physical, spiritual, body and soul. And the question is, when we talk about being marachiv, when we talk about growth, are we talking about the growth of the guf or the growth of the neshama? Growth of the guf does not have to be after eating. There's other ways. The growth of the guf means a person has a physical, materialistic experience, does something that he wants. It might be very sublime, might be listening to music, but it's feeding the body. So as in Shisharim, a person feels his body, but there's another part of him. There's the neshama, and the neshama is the chruchnis. It's nishmas alikami mal. It's a shtikri by neshama. And imagine, says in Shisharim, you want to feed that? You can't feed it something that's physical. You can't feed him a meal. And he gives the famous moshul of a person, a Catholic, a villager, who marries a princess. Imagine that this fellow saved the king's life, and the king brings him his daughter's hand in marriage, and so Givalni was shared between the simple villager and the princess who'd been brought up in the royal palace, and he takes her home to his village, and he wants to give her the best house, the most beautiful clothing, the fanciest jewellery, the best meals. Doesn't mean anything to her, because she's a bas malachim. She knows something, she knows a standard that's well beyond anything that this small village can provide. The nefesh, gaman nefesh leisimole, the nefesh of a person, that the neshama of the person isn't satisfied with what we think it might have. You bring a malach, what type of food are you going to give him? What meal would excite a malach? What music would put him in a good mood? What are you going to give him? What entertainment would there be that would really lift his spirits? You can't talk that way to him. There's nothing in the Hazard that interests him. And the same thing within us as a neshama that is constantly feeling disappointed by what we're feeling. If we raise the simcha, we expand the guf doesn't help the neshama. The neshama wants to be fed something that is ruchni, something that is spiritual. Torah, tefillah, chesed, mitzvahs, that's what would feed the neshama. The answer goes in birth. Because we're faced by choices all the time between guf and nefesh, body or neshama. And we have to choose who we're going to feed, what are we going to expand, and generally one comes at the expense of the other. Are we going to get into something pleasurable, I'm going to read a book, I'll take you some food, and I'm going to get into some other taiva, then I'll expand with the guf. But at the same time, I'll have maybe been mevatel taiva and have lost the connection to ruchnis. So I've expanded the guf, I've tightened the neshama. If you expand the neshama, it generally comes at the expense of the guf. And the question is, what type of simcha am I going to be looking for? Am I going to be looking for simchas haguf, or am I going to be looking for simchas haneshama? It's one or the other. And this brings a lot of stress for Shleitzach, because we're constantly choosing, and the question is, which direction are we going to go? Are we going to feed the guf and therefore have a simchas haguf? But it doesn't last, because it's only physical. The neshama at the same time is feeling starved, frustrated, and that brings the underlying feeling of sadness, of not getting there, of not having achieved what we want to achieve. Reminds me of the Dimterian Chelm. As all Chelma stories, I don't know if it really happened, but there were two brothers who inherited a plot of land, and it was clear in the father's will, the Tzavor said quite clearly, it was a big piece of land that led from one street all the way to the other street. And he wanted both of them to build houses, one facing that street on the right and one facing the street on the left. And there would be a huge strip of land at the back that would serve as the back gardens. It was also clear within the will that one garden was meant to be huge and the other would be quite small. What wasn't clear was which brother was meant to get the large garden and which one was meant to get the small garden. And of course there was a Kederech HaYerushas, there was a bitter machlekas, and they weren't on talking terms. And finally they came to the Chachmei Chelm and they said, we need you to work it out, we can't work it out. If it was that simple, they would have had to go to the Chachmei Chelm. So they looked at the will and they said, you know, Rabbi Yisrael, this is such a tough case. It's going to take us years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, maybe even 20 years. Give us time. And the brother said, Vaseis, give you time. What are we going to do in the meantime? Where are we going to live? So they said, we'll build the houses, and you'll sort out the garden later. And they said, no, if one of us becomes a muhsik, one of us, if we leave it halfway, then the other one will say that's how it's meant to be. And we can't, no, there's no way. So they thought it over for a few days, and they came up with an ingenious idea. They said, you know what? You build the two houses, leave the garden in between, and put two metal rails all the way down the garden, have a fence that crosses from one side to another, but is fixed to those rails, so nobody can claim he's got a muhsuk, because in 15, 20 years' time, when we come to sort out the garden, you can't say, well, you see the garden's been this way. Everybody will know that the fence is on wheels, and it clearly goes up and down these rails. It was clearly not decided. Shalom Ad Yisrael, they said, that's a gewaldige idea. And Taka, that's what they did. They each built their own house, and they had gardens back to back. Shmerel and Zlata. Shmerel never used his garden. He was Bregus. Didn't want to open the garden to where Zlata had his garden. He was Bregus. He never stepped in there. But they had this interesting fence on rails that was set in the meantime halfway down. And Shalom Ad Yisrael. One Shabbos, Shmerel goes away for Shabbos. And Zlata's wife turns to him and she says, listen, Zlata, this is your chance. He's away anyway. You know that Bregus, they don't use the garden. Maybe the main chob between me and you, you know and I know who really should get the big garden. It's us. So just because they don't yet know who's meant to get the big garden, do me a favour. No one's looking. Go out there and move the fence. Just 6 inches. Make our garden a little bit bigger. Okay, sure. No one's looking. He unscrews the two screws and he moves the fence 6 inches. A few weeks later, again Shmerel's away for Shabbos. And again, go on Zlata, another 6 inches. And this happens every few weeks. He keeps moving the fence 6 inches, another 6 inches, another 6 inches, another 6 inches. In the meantime, they know that Shmerel hasn't even opened his back door because they can see it's been locked and overgrown. No, and they're safe. They keep moving the fence another 6 inches, another 6 inches, another 6 inches. And then one day Zlatan's wife turns to him and she says, Zlatan, I don't get it. You keep moving the fence 6 inches at a time. But when I go out in the garden, I can't stand it. I keep feeling like our garden is smaller and smaller and smaller. Now, seeing as Shmerel hasn't been out to the garden, how is it that he keeps making the garden bigger, but he keeps ending up with a smaller garden? Do you get it? Picture Zlatan. He walks out of his house and he goes over to the fence. Which garden is he facing? Shmerel's garden, right? He looks into Shmerel's garden. He doesn't see his own garden because he's looking over the fence. And he said, my wife said, make the garden bigger. So he does. He pulls the fence towards himself. And week after week after week, he's making the garden bigger. And he can't understand why it feels so small. But that is exactly what happens to us. We're faced by choices of Olam Hazeh or Olam Haba. What do we find attractive? Olam Hazeh or Olam Haba? Pashut. Everybody knows the answer. You're faced by a chance of a good piece of cake or an opportunity to go and listen to a shir. Where a person has in front of him a good magazine or an interesting book, if there is usually a good magazine, it's a kosher magazine, Nishkan Trefa magazine, and the shir is to learn another tosfos or to look at the magazine. I'm not saying what we do, but what do we feel attracted to? What do we have cheshit for? What pulls you more, a Mishnah Brura or a newspaper? What do we feel like doing? Listening to the radio for a few minutes or going to davening on time? What do we get more cheshit for, helping another Yid or helping ourselves? Push it. We're either going to expand one or the other. But it's like that fence. When one goes bigger, the other is smaller. We've got a choice. Are we going to expand our aguf? Are we going to find Simchas aguf? Or are we going to find Simchas HaNeshama? But like Zlatan, when we look over the fence, what do we see? We don't see Ruchnius, we see Gashmius. We experience our guf as real. The world around us is all physical material. We don't experience Ruchnius. So when we come to make choices of what? Geschmack. We always lean towards the Gashmius. We imagine, oh, I'll have made the garden bigger. I'll have more space. It'll be geschmack. It's moishech. It pulls me. I've got a feeling that if I do this, I'll have broken out of my limits. And finally, I'll feel good. We put it. We enlarge it. More guf. More geschmack. More money. More power. More control. And what do we find? Less simcha. Because at the same time, we're strangling our neshama. There's less space for the neshama to breathe. More guf, less neshama. And more guf doesn't just mean taiva, simple physical pleasures. More guf is any expansion of our existence in Olam Hazeh. There's so many ways that there's a pleasure in competition, in being a winner, in being successful, in being the first. There's a pleasure in power, in control, in feeling important, in getting recognition from other people. There's a different type of pleasure completely of sitting around and schmoozing or reading or doing something that is entertaining, even though there's no innate value. So Chazal say, kina, taiva, kovid, litzonus, these are all ways of enjoying the guf. But on the other side, connected those pleasures, there are also other pleasures. And if we think about it, there are pleasures of the neshama. When a person is mechavan properly during a davening, a piece of davening, a brach and shemen esra, a part of Sukkot Zimra, it doesn't bring a good feeling with it. A person works on his learning. He's learning a tesis, learning a gemara, learning a mishnah, learning a marashah. And the question is, should we go through it vaguely, or should we really work at it and come out with a clear maskana that we can say off by heart? A tremendous pleasure in really finishing something, in really knowing something. When we have choices of helping other people, a person does something really for another person, really goes out of his way for another person, where it's inconvenient, where it's difficult, where he doesn't feel like doing it. At the end of the day, it brings with it tremendous satisfaction. Why? Simcha sanashama. When the neshama expands, it brings with it simcha. But at every point, when we're faced by gashmias, it seems geshmak, but leaves a difficult aftertaste. We're faced by Ruchnius, it seems difficult, but leaves a wonderful feeling afterwards. And Lashon Chazal, that's the difference between Tzadikim and Rishayim. In Olam Hazeh, in Yonei Gashmias, Tchilosoi Mar, Tchilosoi Mosoik, V'Seifei Mar, it starts off sweet, but ends up with a bitter aftertaste. And Ruchnius is exactly the opposite. Tchilosei mar v'seifei mosik. That same daf gemara, that I couldn't face it. That's so little cheshik. When a person pulls himself through, then there's a tremendous simcha at the end. It brings with it real satisfaction. It's not surprising then that the world is full of unhappy people. Because on the list of the five things that they put down that will bring them pleasure and happiness, they're right. Those things will bring a sense of pleasure, but it'll be tchilosei mosik, the seifei mar. It'll only be sweet in the beginning, it'll leave a feeling of having strangled the neshama afterwards, of having limited himself. And when the nefesh gets to say what it wants to say, there's a feeling, is this what you fed me? Is this what I'm left with? Just the tan, the taste in my mouth, and that's it? And then it's all gone. A person's faced by a shiloh between taiva and kedusha. If you do it in a taiva digger way, it's more attractive. There's a bad feeling. Kedusha digger way, faket, there's a raimans. So we always have these choices. And if we keep feeding the goof, we're going to end up frustrated people. If we choose the tchilosei mar, that which doesn't appeal to us, we have a constant build-up of a feeling of seifei mosik, of the pleasure and the sweetness of having achieved something in teira, in tefillah, in mitzvahs, in avodah, in chesed. L'maisa, now as we stand before Purim, that's one of the great avodahs of this year. The Gemara says, talking about Rabbi Yanki was talking about before, about the sugya of Malacha on Purim, and the Gemara brings a story that Rebbe planted a tree on Purim. Oops, you see, you can do Malacha. It's not the Gemara, Rebbe nota netir shel simcha. Rebbe was planting a tree that they used to sit in, and they would sit under the shade of such a tree during when they were celebrating a simcha, when they wanted to relax. You'd go out to your garden with a specially shady tree, and that's what Rebbe was doing on Purim. And because it's derech simcha, therefore it's not malacha but Purim. I mean, did Rebbe have nothing else to do on Purim other than plant a tree? I mean, we don't have a moment to spare. Shachmonas, Tansavion, okay, Rebbe didn't have a car, but still, when people came to him, he didn't have to go, but that's all he had to do on Purim, he would be netea, a tree. So the Sfasemas, there's a nirdi remezir. Rebbe nota netio shel simcha. He planted a planting of simcha. Rebbe understood that the avoid of Yemei HaPurim is an avoid that is a planting that will grow fruit for the rest of the year. If a person wants to achieve the madrega of Simcha Shel Mitzvah, a person wants to know what it feels like to really get to Simcha Shel Mitzvah, he should plant that Purim. And if he works on Simcha Shel Mitzvah during Purim, he should know that he'll have the purus of that planting all the way through the year. He'll have a closeness to this sugya of Simcha Shel Mitzvah. If a person knows how to move into the area of Simcha Shel Mitzvah, stuch nerevoyim. Because when you get to that, when you start thinking in these terms, it's not just spiritual actions that can bring a person a sense of growth to his neshama. Avada, Torah, and Tefillah certainly do that. Chesed and Tzedakah certainly bring a person a sense of Simcha. But the emes, even a physical act, if a person's doing something for the right reasons, or maybe better, if a person's doing something for a reason, the more machshava, the more understanding, the more hisboinenus a person injects into a maisa, the more shayach that maisa is to Yoni Ruchnius. So therefore he's feeding not just his guf, he's feeding the neshama also. So instead of the frustration afterwards, of feeling, Gornish geblitten, there's no hanefesh loy simoni. Hanefesh simoni. A person can eat a meal, but if during that meal his mind is switched on, he's thinking, he's aware of what it's about, it will bring him satisfaction, not just to the guf, but also to the neshama. If a Suda Shabbos is a time where a person stands, they're building the family, they're celebrating Shabbos Kodesh because the Rebbein Shem was buried from Ivarit, he was made from the tribe, there's this boneness that goes with it. Where there's Machshava, the Maisa changes. There's a depth to that. As soon as Yontif, a person thinks about what the Yontif is about, that Suda's not Gashmias anymore. He's not just feeding his guf, he's expanding in all directions, but guf, uber nefesh. So of course it brings tremendous simcha. And kol shekein kavuchimah, and b'nei shel kavuchimah, and yom tov purim. which is a yontif of simcha, that when a person sits down to the Suda's Purim, if the Suda's Purim is done right, ein lecha netiyah shel simcha gedolah mizu, it's something that changes a person's whole perspective. But how do we achieve that? Vayomim ha'elu nizkarim v'nasim. So the Heligus Fasemus, one of the Chidushim of Purim is that you don't get to any actions, and you don't get to do anything until you've spent a long time thinking. Ideally, Megillah is read at a pace that isn't there to get you out to the Tainus or home to for your wife. Megillah's Esther is read at a pace that a person can follow. I think why the reason why sometimes it's read so fast is because we lose our concentration. But the vault is, we're meant to be concentrating. The Gemara is a tzad, the kriyosa zu'alila. You know a person's yetzer halal on Purim? Because he learns the Megillah. Where's halal? Where does the word halal come into the Megillah? Good, it's a story about the Ness, and the Ness is gufa, a gili of halal. And we're suddenly sub the shirish avodah. There's a halal b'peh, and there's a halal b'machshove. In Kriyas HaMegillah, he says the ikke halal is b'machshove. If a person follows the plot and thinks himself, wow, this is what the Rebbeinu Shloim did for us. This is how much the Rebbeinu Shloim cares for us, even in Golus. This is how involved the Rebbeinu Shloim is, even in the Nyonim of Olam Hazeh. When we see a court intrigue, you see a plot, and people fighting with each other, getting on with each other, struggling, and there's a power struggle. Haman, Mordechai, Haman, Achashverosh, and all that going on, Yechap. There's nothing just happening. It's all the Rebbeinu Shloim. The nizkorim, that zechira, that awareness, awakens by a person. Zechira. Zechira is all the things that we know, but normally forget. That's what zechira means. It means to remember. It means to focus on the truths that are normally dormant. To arouse those feelings. To recognize for real there's a Rebbeinu Shloim runs the world. If a person's been through that experience, oh, so the Sfasemis, such a person can then go on and have mitzvahs of Purim. You know what it says? There's a din that Suda's Purim that the person has balayla is not yotzer. So why not? Purim, the date has already started. So the Sfasemis, because you can't do it balayla, because balayla you haven't yet had the Mikra Megillah. Without Mikra Megillah you can't have the Meisim. Nizkorim v'nasim. Let's see a person go through this Kira balayla. Hear it again in the morning. Oh, when a person's had a Nizkorim, then he can have a Nasim. A person walks out of the Megillah and then recognizes, one second, where are we going in life? Is it the competition? Is it the fact that I'm better, that I'm faster, that I'm ahead? No, Mishlech, Monis, Ishma, Re'eyu. We're all the same, Avis Yisrael, every Yid is a place, a feeling of togetherness. Is the satisfaction Olam Hazeh going to be about taking everything for my needs? No, Matonis Lev Yoinim. Let's give it to people who need more than us. Giving up the tithe, giving up the kinna, giving up the covered. If a person goes through the day and recognizes that every moment can be an Iskorim V'nasim, can be a time of focus. We get so involved in running around, spieling and taking kids and giving Matonis Lev Yoinim, Shlech Monis, Ahina, just, when are we going to celebrate Purim? That is the celebration of Purim. A day of Purim that is constantly nizkarim with zchira, with awareness. Oh, I've got a chance to give another yid, to make another yid happy, to think about the satisfaction, the happiness of those who are receiving our shlachmanos, not just the technicality of getting all the deliveries done, where there's a nizkarim manasim, there's a miludik simcha. He adds one more thing to Sasemus, that these days of simcha, don't come on their own. Lios oisim! The Kohen Yisrael are oisa, they turn these days into me simcha mishta v'yontuf. It doesn't happen on its own. Through our nizkorin, we get to an asim. We start tomorrow with Shabbos Pasha Zohar, which is also zechira, awareness, being awake, being alive. If we have that, it's a wonderful Purim this year. You start with Shabbos, you don't just slide in and glide in straight from the workplace, straight from the gas. We come in after Shabbos or Yom the Nishmosin, a chance to stop, to learn the Megillas Esther, to misbein the Onim of Purim, miskorin v'nasin, through Machshava, a person can attain a tremendous level of Simcha, Ivdu es Hashem, Simcha, Boyu l'fana b'rinola.